Welcome to Bouncing Back Stronger, the podcast where we explore the incredible power of you. Resilience, personal growth, and triumph over adversity. I'm your host, Sarah Jane Vasquez, and I'm thrilled to have you here. Each week, we'll delve into inspiring personal stories, we'll share practical strategies for growth, and provide valuable insights from my own expert experience and as a trained therapist, hypnotherapist, and mindset coach. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to bounce back stronger than ever before. And if you enjoy the show, please press follow. We'd really appreciate your help and your support here at Bouncing Back Stronger. Now, let's get started. Welcome to Bouncing Back Stronger. Now, today, I've been really excited about this. As part of the Women's Collection, I've been after this lady for some time. She's hard to get, but she is very busy, and you'll understand why in a moment. So welcome, Susie Dent, to Bouncing Back Strong.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so lovely to finally be here. We've been trying to catch up for a while, haven't we?
We have. Even our prep call was on FaceTime when you were in Euston Station. Now, you're now based in, well, you live on the Gold Coast in Australia. But you were over in the UK for some time in the summer, weren't you? And we managed to get a call in when you were here. And now we finally got to our recording, which I am delighted about. So kind of to introduce you, Susie, you're a presentational skills tech coach. That's not all, but tell us about that.
Okay, so presentation skills coaching, I have 40 years a career in film, television and advertising as a hair and makeup artist and a wardrobe stylist. And I've also been, as a creative person, I've also been speaking on stages as well as a motivational speaker and just doing different things and talking about makeup and doing seminars and all that sort of stuff, you know, that I actually do in my line of work. So since 2017, since I became an international beauty queen, at the right age of 55, you know, I did a lot of press, and I learnt, I got training from the best about, being on a stage and speaking on stage, and I learnt a lot about conducting myself in front of camera. And I really wanted to create that into something that I could help other people with. And it's something that I really can. So as a presentation skills coach, I help people find their story because let's face it, we've got a story.
And
help others to heal and be on a path that they need to be on, you know, when we hear those stories of others. So I teach people how to find their story. And we need to find like a 5-minute version and sometimes even a 3-minute version for live media. You need to find a 10, a 20 and a 30-minute version for podcasts and magazine interviews. So your story needs to have so many different facets to it to be media friendly, to get you out there so your voice is heard by as many people as possible.
I think that's fabulous, you know, because as you said, we all have a story. I certainly have a story or stories. And I think sometimes if you're sitting with yourself and you're in your own head about your story, it can become quite overwhelming. So it's always welcoming when you can say to somebody else, look, this is my story, but I'm overthinking it and I just don't quite know how to say it. I know what I want to say, but I don't know how to say it. I know I've come up against those kind of barriers myself.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly right. And you do. You need someone to look at it from the outside in who's doing that. Excuse me. It's like going for an interview. You want to have everything in a kind of an order to take the person on a journey of who you are. I think a bit of a drink of tea. Hang on.
Yeah, that's okay. Of course. So
about speaking and words getting stuck in your throat. There you go.
So, as you said, you were a makeup artist, and then I know that
I still work as a hair and makeup.
And your makeup does look fabulous. I must say, you'll have to give me some tips after the show.
Where did this, I mean, because I know that there was a change for you, wasn't there? You know, there was a change for you. Was it 50s? Were you in your early 50s? Was that right?
Yeah. A lot of things changed for me, actually. I was in a marriage that I'd been in since I was 29.
So that was it, 30 years?
We weren't married then, but we've been together. So I was together with my now ex-husband for nearly 30 years, and things started changing in our life, as it does in many of our lives when we reach this kind of 50s age group stage of our lives. You know, some women it can happen a little bit earlier, some a little bit later. But menopause comes along, slaps you on the back of the head with a vengeance. And if you've got unresolved issues with your past, or you're in a relationship that's not quite as conducive to you being raised up and celebrated as a person, then you have to look at these things. You get to this stage in your life and you think, do I want to do this for the next 30 years? And sometimes the answer is no.
I've had a lot of conversations now, you know, around the menopause, certainly for this kind of women's collection. And it's almost like a little bit of a light bulb moment for a lot of women, isn't it? But then there's kind of two sides to it, isn't it? Because there are the women who go, you know what, things aren't how I like them, I'm feeling a particular way and I need to change. But it's perhaps, I don't know, circumstances as well can have a massive factor, but it's also maybe having the courage to change things. As you said, you maybe sit there with yourself and say, do I really want this for the next 30 years or do I not? And I think that's where you were.
I was absolutely there. And you know what I realized? I realized something that often as wives, we tend to put ourselves second. And I realized that I actually loved my husband more than I loved myself. And that wasn't a good thing because I wasn't doing as well as I should have been, you know. It was like two steps forward, one step back. And my husband at the time, he was having mental health problems and anger management issues, and he was feeling, men go through menopause as well, you know, not the same as we do, but they go through a change where their testosterone, you know, starts to affect it. It's a hormonal change in our lives that we all go through for getting older. But he turned into a bit of a bastard, really. And 10 years I put up with it. And then one day I just thought, oh, I've had enough. I got a door slammed in my face and I thought, that's it. I'm so tired of you offloading your problems about yourself onto me, because this is toxic relationship that we're in now. And this is what we do a lot of the time as wives and as women. We allow our spouses to verbally offload on us because they don't have anyone else to talk to, so they're going to talk at us. So we tend to wear it. And me, like many other women, I felt it was my duty as his wife to stand there and let him offload. And I thought I was helping him because then he'd go and have a sleep and he'd feel much better. So I was helping him, and I felt that that's what I was doing, a duty of my as.
But at that point, you weren't helping yourself, were you? Because he was okay, but you were not okay.
No, that's exactly right. And I started, took a few years because I'm pretty hardy person, but he started to wear me down, especially going through the throes of menopause, where your bloods are all over the place as far as hormonally, you're out of whack if you've got any hormones left at all, and you're going, you know, you're sleeping and you're sweating and all that sort of stuff. And parts of it he was really good in, and other parts he was really not. He had an addiction problem, as a lot of people get addicted to something to get through adult life, whether it's alcohol or sleeping pills or anything you can get that's actually given to you. You know, I'm not talking anything illegal. Just like Prozac changed a whole lot of people, changed their personalities when it first came out. You know, drugs can change your personality and you're not the same sort of person, you know, as far as those sort of things, as you used to be. And he changed, and he started talking to me in a way that was not good. We had a very codependent relationship. Mm-hmm. I would cop it on the chin and he'd keep dishing it out, and then I would start getting angry, mm-hmm. and he'd push me to be angry, which is not my natural state. Mm-hmm. And so there's always this backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, and me walking around, and including our child, walking around on eggshells so that we wouldn't trigger him. Mm. And you tend to put up with this behavior because it's either put up with it or go through the drama of having to move out or do that. And it's like, do I have much money? Can I afford
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
You know,
it's like I ended the practical things, isn't it?
Practical takes
over. My heart might want to do something else, but the practicalities can be quite something else.
That's exactly right. And then COVID comes and I lost both my careers. And I had to rejig my life and started working as a carer. So I just upped that and did more carer work. My faces for makeup and hair and my stages for talking to people in big rooms with lots of them there, okay. you know, disappeared in 1 week, poof, gone.
Yeah.
And that was my earnings. So I found something else to do, which was caring, which was great, mm-hmm. And really good. And then I was putting other people before myself as well. Which also started to.
There's a pattern there, isn't there? Actually, even as a makeup artist, you are making others feel good and look great.
That's right.
And giving them all the compliments and what they need to hear. And in caring, it's a wonderful, rewarding job for many. But again, yeah, you're making someone else feel better. And I guess in all of this, and including your marriage, it's, where's Susie?
Yes, it was. It was so like that.
Yeah.
When I finally made the decision that I wanted to put myself first, and I had thought for years that this, you know, we were going to grow old together, walk hand in hand along the beach together, yada, yada, yada. No, I just didn't want to listen to him anymore. I didn't want to be around him anymore. We got to the stage where, you know, when you really go off someone and you're done. Well, I went off him and I was done. You know, and our daydream.
But you brought up a good point there, you know, the kind of societal and our own expectations that we've been conditioned to believe that, you know, yes, you get married and then you'll grow old and you'll just, you know, you'll grow together and you'll do all of these things together. And I think that just puts so much pressure on you when you're going, yeah, I don't think this is going to go that way. But I, you know, but should I stay with it just in case it does?
Well, you do. You succumb to societal pressure and you do stay. I mean, you know, mine was third time's a charm. You know, one time it's like we can't get divorced because we don't have enough money. Right, okay. You can't go live anywhere else. No one can live anywhere else. We all have to live in the same place. Even when we eventually did get divorced, I backdated it a year because we lived in separate bedrooms anyway, and we'd lived in separate bedrooms for like 20 years. So I haven't woken up or gone to sleep with anybody for 20 years, which suits me fine. I've had the remote to the TV, to my own TV, had my own bathroom, so I haven't had to wipe up the wee on the wall, on the floor. 2 years ago, I quit cleaning the house. I announced it one New Year's Eve to my teenage son at the time, and my ex-husband went, right, it's all yours. I'm not cleaning up your urine or any of your food or anything anymore. So for the next 2 years, we lived in a pigsty.
You knew enjoyed that. They probably thought she'll get fed up soon. She'll get fed up soon. And they were waiting and waiting and you never did. Good for
you. I didn't
get
fed up. My room upstairs was great. That was tidy. My bathroom was tidy. I came down, used the same plates, did my own food. We'd been cooking individually for years. We lived a very separate life inside one house, you know.
Was your son okay in this? How old was your son at the time?
No. He suffered PTSD. He never got physically violent. It was mental and emotional and psychological. And yelling, and you know, we should know he would lose it sometimes. And you know, he'd yell us, we go, what do you need us to do? And he'll say, you should.
And if you're walking around on eggshells, he's going to be living in that state of anxiety continually.
That's right,
yeah,
that's exactly right. So after the decision, I made the decision that I was done and that it was going to happen whether I liked it or not, regardless of what excuses he came up with. I went, that's it. I spoke to my son and I said, right, this is it. I want you to back me. I want you to stand there when I tell him that we're done. I want you backing with all of it, which it was not a problem at all. And the reason I say that is because my son's 6'5". It's just more having the physical presence of, a 19-year-old standing there going, Mom.
Yeah, he's got your back.
Yeah. Mm. But it was the guy who released us for both of us. My ex is much happier living by himself, doing whatever it is that he's doing. I went overseas, we finally, we had to live together for 2 years after we divorced. And he stopped talking.
I think a lot of couples do that, don't they? They're separated and because of the practicalities.
All that sort of stuff. Yeah.
You just have to do what you've got to do sometimes.
You have to be grown-ups, You have to be grown-ups. Like, we didn't go to court or anything like that. I did the divorce all online. It cost me $300 or something.
Wow.
Great.
Wow.
No lawyers, no nothing, didn't need anything like that because that's not what it was about. There was no other people involved because there was no, I certainly was not interested in having another man in my life. Are you kidding me? I couldn't get rid of the one I had. and no one would have him because he was a basket case. So, things just did. It just took a while. We had to sell the house. That took ages. He wanted me to paint the house and he wanted to renovate the house and I didn't really want to, but I found myself stuck renovating and painting the house. I didn't need to and I didn't want to and I would have really liked to have sold it a whole year before. However, that's what happened. Didn't make any money on the house, lost money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I figured, oh, well, that was the last time he gets to tell me what to do. Any business, anything. So, because once the house was sold, everything, was split in half. Whatever was there was,
And describe that feeling for you.
It was weird because we lived in this home for 20 years. It also, to me, represented failure because we, when someone's not very well, they're not necessarily working very well or living very well. So we got in massive amounts of debt. So we had to sell our home. I came out of a 30-year marriage at 60 or nearly 61 with debt, not with a nice little nest egg where I see friends going, oh, I'm retiring. I'm like, oh, that's good. I don't feel like retiring anyway because I'm really young. And I said to one of them, I said, God, I'd be so bored. What do you do? She's like, oh, I read. And I think, oh, God, I'm going to vomit now. I'm just not in. No, I'm really young. I'm just starting again, So I came to England just recently. As we mentioned, I was over there because I'd freed in December. And I came to England because I was part of a documentary that was being launched by ITVX called Rolf Harris Hiding in Plain Sight, because I'm one of the women who helped put Rolf Harris in jail in 2014 in England. So I was coming over.
Tell us about that.
That was one of these instances where I had a bad day with a dirty old man who happened to be really famous. And unfortunately what he did with his fame and his fortune and his connections and his power back in 1986 and from the 70s onwards had abused his power and abused his fame and abused his connections, like we've seen many men have done and have been caught. This case, however, back in 2014, so I was his makeup artist in 1986 when he came to Australia, and I spent a whole day with him and he couldn't keep his hands off me. So he was running. So I basically, I just say, I had a bad day being groped by a dirty old man for 6 hours, and at the end of the day, I hid in a cupboard outside the studio door, which was a broom cupboard, and it was big enough to fit me into
so
it.
So you had to hide away from him at that time.
I chose to hide because at the end of the day, back then it was video, so the makeup was thick, the lights were hot, so you were always touching them up and you're always blotting them because it was hot and sweaty. So we would always, especially men, always take their makeup off because it was really obvious. And I knew he would have wanted his makeup off. I also knew he wanted to have got me in that room by ourselves, because he certainly didn't stop touching me when I was in a studio with male crew around me either. So I did not feel safe to go in that little makeup room with him, not one bit. And I just had to have found a cupboard that I ducked into that was a big tall cupboard, because it was, you know, a big studio. And I kept the door open just a little bit, and I could look up the corridor to where I'd see him standing outside in the corridor outside my makeup room, because I had all my kit all set up and everything. And the powers that be, that I like to call them, that ran Channel 7 Studios, came down the very end of the studio, which is where the door was to leave, and gestured him and kind of came down and got him. And there's sort of, you know, back slapping and, you know, shoulder slapping and all that sort of stuff. They escorted him out of the building. And then I waited still just to make sure he'd gone, because the corridor was really big and it was really wide. And if I'd stepped out and he'd come back, he would have seen me. I would have had to have gone and finished my job. When they all came back in and they kept walking, only then did I come out of the room, and I went back and packed up my kit. And then I said to, I found the woman who was in charge of Channel 7, the makeup room, and I said to her, you know, I just had the worst day with a dirty old man. And she said to me, oh, I thought you knew. And I said, knew what? She said, oh, his nickname's the Octopus. He does that to all makeup artists. So it was well known in my industry of film and television and entertainment that Rolf Harris was a dirty old man who liked to fill up his makeup artists among other people.
And it was just acceptable. It's crazy, isn't it?
Well, things, it wasn't just him back in those days. Men touched women whether we liked it or not. It wasn't great times for women, as it hadn't been in our mother's day or my mother's day or my grandmother's day. Things were crap for women. Each generation has stepped up and made changes and made it better for the generation after us to come forward. You know? So I feel I'm really very grateful to have had a bad day with a dirty old man. I feel like life chose me at the ripe young age of 23 back in 1986 to be this strong woman, to come forward for the case.
Did you go forward at that time? Did you speak to the police then?
No. Women didn't have any rights back then.
No.
That was
past as assault. And I guess as well, it's the thing like, well, who would listen to me?
Well, nobody listened to you as a woman. And especially not, you didn't actually have the right to go in. That wasn't assault. Men could do that, whether you liked it or not. You could go to a policeman and it would make no difference back then.
Shocking,
now,
you were just an object.
Now it's sexual assault, right? And it's assault to touch another person without their explicit, yes, please touch me, regardless of whether they're a television star or not, you know. So I came forward because I saw a current affairs show here, and a woman who was 49, her name was Tonya, she had been sexually assaulted by Rolf Harris when she was 14, I think, as a schoolgirl dancer in a dance troupe, because he did a lot of work with children. So she came forward, and she was being crucified by the press. And I knew she wasn't lying. And because I'd never kept it a secret my whole life, I told every man his dog, you know, I wasn't going to be quiet now when it actually counted. So I did some Googling and I sent off some emails to and found Operation Yew Tree, which is what it was called. And I think I contacted Scotland Yard at the time and gave them a few choice things like the octopus and who I was. And they contacted me really fast. And then I had, I was talking to the guy who was in charge of the whole thing. And then I had a constable that was given to me that was my like liaison. And it took about 6 months before I realized whether I would be going over there or not. And then they flew me over there to take the stand in Suffolk Crown Court.
Wow.
And I gave my testimony. I was called a bad character witness.
Why?
Which is basically to show. For his bad character.
Right, it's okay.
So, well, this was my day as his makeup artist. Yeah. This is how many times he touched me. This is what he tried to do to me. And this is what it was like working with him. Mm-hmm. So it just gives you, you know, goes to show what sort of person he really is, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and the beautiful thing was that there was one stage in that courtroom that I really felt that I was in there with a whole lot of middle-aged women, but they're little girls on the inside, the little girls that have been sexually assaulted, you know. I'd been sexually assaulted when I was 12, so my 12-year-old girl was there in that courtroom going, rah, you know, don't.
We finally got this opportunity to have our voice heard. It must have been very emotional.
It was a really big deal because that particular case, which was part of Operation Yew Tree, took down dozens of entertainers and men of that age and that ilk. Some really huge entertainers like Jimmy Savile in England, they found out just what a monster he was.
Oh,
and all because witnesses, survivors, victims weren't listened to back then. So this is the first case of its kind where victims slash survivors of historical crimes were being listened to and heard. So change could only be made when all of a sudden dozens and dozens and dozens of women come forward telling similar stories of, you know, things happening to them with Rolf Harris, then the cops are going to sit up and listen, you know. The thing with Rolf Harris is that he looked and appeared harmless, and millions of people around the world loved and adored him for what he did. So society was completely changed by this one particular case and this man getting found guilty as the pedophile that he was. So, you know, and it was groundbreaking in that it was very brave for the witnesses to come forward and the victims to come forward. There was 10 of us that were chosen to be part of the case. Four were women who were bringing a case against him, and six were bad character witnesses, including one man. It's been amazing to have been part of a case like this and to be able to have used a moment in time of my own that was particularly unpleasant and turned something
positive.
That's been palatable and positive for the world to listen to and be able to use my experience on the press to help other people heal. I was in a rally in England, and I spoke briefly, and this woman came up to me afterwards and she said, because of me and the other women that came forward, her 9-year-old daughter came forward back in 2014 to tell her mum and dad that she'd been sexually assaulted when she was 7 because of this case and all the press and everything. And
see, that's just how it can touch other people. Can have a real snowball effect.
Huge.
But it's not even direct to the case, but yet somebody out there is listening to it going, I identify with that, I relate to that, that's like
that's
me,
right.
You know, I must go and say something. Yeah. And then it blew up for you, didn't it, when you were here, because of course he died.
You did.
Yeah, yeah.
That with a smile on my face. That was awful.
Yeah,
he did. And I seem to I've become the voice of this case. And I did a lot of press when I was there since when he died. I was on Good Morning Britain, which was great. Sky News, which had an audience of 3 million.
Wow.
I was on the biggest podcast in the UK with a guy called James English, which was great.
Oh, yeah. I love listening to James English.
Amazing people. Yeah, he's great.
So does my auntie.
Really good. Huge TV shows, live crosses to Australia. But the thing was is that I got to control the narrative, which means that we were told like 2 weeks after the fact, the public, that Rolf Harris had died. So people were disgruntled. They wanted to be there. They wanted to do whatever it was that they wanted to do when they found out that he died. And who do they do that towards, you know? So I surprised a lot of press people when I said that the first people I thought about were his wife and his daughter, Bindi, because we forget that there are women in the lives of monsters, and they have to deal with what they've done, and they have to deal with their lives, and they have to get on with it. And their lives have also been completely changed because of what Rolf did. And I thought it was an amazing thing that they moved the funeral and did it really privately and smuggled his body out of wherever and buried him quietly, so that his 93-year-old wife, who I believe has dementia,
who
else was there, can have some peace.
Yeah.
Because all I saw was, in my mind's eye, was hundreds of really angry people getting their anger off on the wrong person.
Yeah.
She didn't do anything.
I think she was heavily criticised for staying with him, wasn't she?
Oh, I'm sure she was. People will criticise everything, won't they? Mm. She just said he was a touchy-feely man. She always looked a little bit like she was off with the pixies. I mean, she was a very creative, artsy person. Maybe she did not pay attention. Maybe she didn't know. Some women are completely blind as to what goes on.
You just don't know, do you, what goes on? You know, you just don't know. So, therefore, how can we judge?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, we found out that he sexually assaulted his daughter's best friend in their house and groomed her in there. You know, it was like he was found guilty without a shadow of a doubt, which was really good. And it woke the world, or the Western world, up. They stopped believing that television was real.
Or that these people should be on pedestals.
Yeah, because they're not, you know.
Yeah.
And we found out about Bill Cosby, and, you know, that blew people away as well, who's drugging women and all sorts of stuff that's going on, because Operation New Tree opened the door.
The floodgates.
It was the first of its kind. There was one in Australia with an Australian actor here on a show called Hey Dad, and then the Rolf, and at the same time Operation New Tree was happening in the UK. And then one by one they all kind of came tumbling down, you know, these men that were being caught out because witnesses were being believed.
And we've got a big one going on currently, haven't we, at the moment, with a big celebrity, yeah.
You do, and you never know. Because the celebrity in question is a controversial one, who has not made any secrets of his faults as a human or his beliefs as a human. And we've seen people in position in media positions like him to be, and who are listened to and heard. We've watched them disappear, haven't we? Women disappear, we've watched men disappear, we've watched lots of people who are vocal, all of a sudden we don't hear from them anymore.
Go off the radar,
completely off the radar. So, you know, I see both sides of the story, and then again, maybe he's guilty. Maybe he's guilty, you know,
but that's probably a whole another podcast, Susie. So, you know, with all of this, and when you sort of like when you were over here in the UK, lots were happening for you, wasn't it? And so then you've channeled this into, you know, what did you say to me? 60 is the new
40.
60 is the new 40. And I love that. Okay. So what's that meaning for you now? I mean, we've already said that you're not ready to retire, and good for you. I know that I won't be either. I don't think I'll be able to, but, you know, what does this mean for you, and what does it mean for you now, and what's your message for other women? I mean, I know that you've just wrote a book.
So I have. So I just, so when I went to the UK, it was also to launch my book, 60-40, The Ultimate Guide to Defying Age.
That word, to defying age.
Yeah.
It's really fierce.
So I'm pro aging, not anti aging.
Great.
When we say anti aging, it's like we're saying there's something wrong with it. And there's nothing wrong with aging. It's how you do it, you know. And I'm like, I'm 61 and a half now, and I don't feel old, and I'm not cutting my hair off anytime soon, nor am I shooting Botox in my face. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
I'm reinventing myself.
I love your attitude. It's a lovely attitude to have. And you know, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but I think it was Helen Mirren who said, you know, growing old is a privilege. Why don't we embrace it more and really be grateful for it? Because there's so many who don't make it to their 50s, 60s, 70s.
That's exactly right. They don't. One of the reasons why people don't make it is because they don't look after the vessel that they've been given. Mm-hmm. It's never too late to start.
I don't think it's just physical either. I think it's our mental health.
It's mental
too.
It happens with mental. Mm. So in my book, I talk a lot about mindset. Mm-hmm. Because how we think about ourselves and the words we use about ourselves to ourselves are what is really key, you know. If you walk around saying that you're old, you'll be old. If you
Absolutely.
Walk around saying you can't do something, you won't be able to do it. If you're like, you know, I say, people say, how are you? And I go, I'm fit, young, strong and vital, thanks. How are you?
I mean, some of them who don't know you just look there and go, okay. But, you know, going back to that mindset, even this morning I was doing my kettlebells and there's a particular exercise and in my head I was going, I hate this exercise, I hate this exercise. And I thought, Sarah, switch that right now. I love this exercise. Yeah. Bring it on. You know, go about it with a bit more energy. But you're so right. It's how we speak to ourselves and it's the language you use. And if we are going to use that negative language, it's logic. You're going to wear yourself down. And yeah, you wouldn't use that with a friend.
No. So we have to make sure that we are our own best friends, you know. When I went to England, I went for 3 weeks, right, and then Rolf Harris died. So I decided to stay for 3 months. Because I also realised while I was there that I was in a stage of recalibration. I was recalibrating my life, you know, and it was really great to just be in an environment where I could just be still with myself and figure out what I wanted to do and who I was, or even not figure out anything, just breathe and go for walks in an entirely different country, listening to different sets, just being myself.
It's a great point, really. You were able to step out of your old environment. You were able to step out of the familiar into the unfamiliar, but rather than be uncomfortable with the unfamiliar, you were curious and you embraced it and you took it for what it was. And it's
so important. And so important. Nobody really tells us that there's stages in our lives that we really have to recalibrate from. And one of those is a long-term relationship, you know, because you're used to doing things the same way. You think a certain way. You do things a certain way. You do stuff. You become in a life habit of how you conduct yourself, just with doing anything, even folding towels. So you have to recalibrate everything and change how you do it. Well, you have to break the energetic tie between yourself and your ex. Because when you've been with someone and you've had an intense relationship with them, you do have an energetic tie with them.
There is an alignment of sorts, isn't there? There is an invisible bond. Because if you've been together so long, your thinking and your behaviours can tend to probably become attuned. So you need to kind of come back to say, well, again, we'll go back to that question, who am I?
That's right. What do I think? Mm. What do I want to do?
Yeah. What do I want to do?
That's exactly right. What do I want to do? So whilst I was there, I created my course, which is 60 is the New 40, based on my book, The 30-Day Disrupt Aging Challenge. And in it, there is daily disciplines to do every day. Not easy things, not hard. It's not a hard thing, like drinking 2 liters of water a day. Clunk, clunk, clunk. And I give you hints and tips of how to trick yourself into doing it with a really good looking glass. It's the exercise.
Make it special. Make it luxurious.
You know, exercises, certain why certain foods are bad for you, things and checks that you should do, and a lot of it, and communication. I speak a lot about communication. When we get to midlife, I really believe that we need a communication upgrade. Some of us seem to be still operating on the parameters of how we communicated in our 30s. And if you're in the dating scene, that's why it's not working for you, because you need to up it, you know. And if you're not in the dating scene, you've been in this program state also to acquiesce to children and to husbands and to parents and all that sort of stuff. So when you do get to recalibrate yourself, you find out who you really are at your core, you know. Super important to move forward and to do more things. So that's also what I like to teach as a skills presentation coach, who you are as a person, take you on a big journey, figure out what your story is, what the best part of your story is for the press, who you can save the most with and all that sort of stuff. And it's life has been an amazing, amazing journey, Sarah, so far. And I'm so grateful to just being in England for 3.5 months, to coming home, setting up new stuff, about to launch my course. Last week I launched my podcast that I did 12 episodes of while I was in England called Empowered Expression.
Yes, fantastic. Yeah.
Everybody who I've ever been on a podcast with, you've all inspired me.
That is so good. I am so pleased. And your course, is this an online course? You know, all your details will be on the show notes for the listeners to get in touch with you and follow you. But will these be, you know, is your course there for anybody to sort of like, you know, have a look at?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's an online course.
Yeah.
Fantastic. With videos. So you have 30 days and you get 30 days worth of videos, about 22 minutes each, and you get a really beautiful workbook to follow. Mm-hmm. And you just work through, and I can pretty much, well, I don't know, we're allowed to say we can guarantee, but, you know, when you up your water intake, for instance, fine lines and wrinkles will disappear on your skin because your body's more hydrated. I teach holistic ways to make your hair grow naturally, to make, you know, to make your skin really glow as you get older.
Oh, give us a cheap tip.
Healthy tip.
Yeah. It doesn't cost the earth. Castor oil. Eyebrows as well, and eyelashes, castor oil.
You grow your hair. So castor oil, you can rub it into your scalp and through your hair, heat it up a bit. So if you've got it in a cup, put that cup inside another thing with boiling water and just heat it up a bit. Mm-hmm. You can mix it with a little bit of oil if you like coconut oil, because it's quite viscous, it's thick. Mm-hmm. I get a tinted brush and I just put it on my part, clean it, do it again, and then rub it in. Mm-hmm. And then I towel on my pillowcase and I sleep in it. I pull it all the way through to the ends of my hair. It not only does it make your hair grow, but it also feeds your hair, feeds the hair shine.
Nourishes it, yeah.
So you do. Omegas, it's a food.
Self-care. There's a lot in there about your own self-care, looking after you. I had a conversation with a client the other day and she's continually pleasing other people. And I said, start pleasing yourself. You know, but I think as we've grown, when we were younger, if a parent perhaps said to you, please yourself, it was almost like, oh, I can't please myself. It just made me feel guilty now. I'll have to go and do this. But it is really, let's reverse that. Please yourself.
Yeah, but it is. As you get older, you need to.
You do.
The happier you are with who you are, mentally, emotionally, and physically, the happier you can give, the more happiness, I should say, you can give to those that you love around you. The more centered you are, the more you can teach them. It's so important that
you've got to keep your bucket full.
And if it
is depleting, you know, get your book and you can find reasons perhaps where it is depleting and then what to do about it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
So Susie, you know, what's next for you? I can imagine there's a lot.
Let's see what's next. So launching my course is next.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be launching my course. I've got more speaking engagements coming up, which is great, which I really love. I also, I'm an audiobook narrator, so I enjoy reading audiobooks. At the moment I'm reading a really sexy one. So I have to.
I'd say you'd be good at that one, your husky voice.
I have to get my sexy voice on. Just great fun. But I just, I'm just loving life, actually.
Yeah, I can tell. It's really infectious. It's really lovely to have this conversation. And I'm sure you've given the listeners a bit of bump today, shall we say. And you know, bouncing back from, you know, a divorce, it's just not all bad, is it? In fact, it's not bad at all.
No.
Take that step if you're feeling stuck. Yeah,
that's right. And the thing
take
is,
your
is
time as well. You can take your time, like you did. You didn't just walk out, did you? You know, you took some time about it, and you got things into order. And then, you know, when the time was right, because I'm a believer in that, when the time's right, the universe will say it's right.
Yeah, you have to take little steps. If you're freeing yourself from a quite a long-term relationship, there are baby steps that you need to take because you need to build up your own strength.
Exactly.
My first step was actually opening up my own bank account. And I know there's some women that are going to be watching this going, oh, my God, I don't believe you did that. It was actually a bit scary to do it because we'd had joint bank accounts all the time.
Way through,
but how empowering.
Yeah.
Just standing in Dublin saying to myself, I don't have to go home because I've got no one to go home for and nobody that needs me, so I can stay here for as long as I like. So you can stay where you are for as long as you like too, and just remember, always dream and dream big and always be careful of the words that you use to describe yourself, because you are amazing and you can do anything that you want to do.
Do you think that's our takeaway for today? You are amazing. You dream big. Watch your language you use with yourself, and you can do anything you want to do at whatever age, might I add. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much, Susie, for joining me today. Really, really fun, engaging, captivating, energetic talk there, and I'm sure you've given our listeners lots of food for thought. I'll be watching you very closely, and I'll be excited to follow what you know, what you're up to. So thanks very much, Susie.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you so much, everybody. Keep in touch with me. As Sarah said, she'll have all my information up here. I'd love to talk to any of you who want to reach out.
Thanks, Susie. I'll see you soon.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Bounce It Back Stronger. I hope you've taken lots from this today, either for you or for somebody else. If you'd like to come on the show, you have a personal story, or perhaps you're an expert in a particular field, then please get in touch. You may even wish to work with me on all things linked to changing your beliefs and your behaviours. You'll find all my links in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.